What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode is going to be a bunch of housekeeping. It's going to be some updates on injuries, on when the guys that the Wizards traded for are actually going to see the floor. I want to talk about the All-Star game. I streamed it, but I thought it was terrible. I want to give my take on it. And then it's going to be a mailbag episode. If you submitted, I tweeted on Monday, if anyone had any pressing questions about the Wizards, as we enter the final stretch, the final 30 games of the year. Anyone have any pressing questions that you wanted me to try to answer, you know, drop them below. I got a good amount of responses. So if you're one of those people that asked a question, I'm going to try my best to answer it in this episode as well. So kind of a midway point, All-Star break, more chill episode. You know, if you haven't tuned into the Wizards in a while, you're checking back into the pod. Hopefully this will get you, acclimated to kind of what is going on as the Wizards enter the final, you know, 30 plus games of the season. The first thing on the agenda, some injury updates. Obviously, Alex Saar missed a decent bit. I think around 8 games in total with that ankle injury. Was on the injury report, then off, then on. It was very weird with that timeline. But he returned for the final game against Indiana, a game Washington should have won. He didn't play particularly well. Really bad shooting numbers. Defense was all right. Obviously, shaking off some rust from missing a while of action. Didn't look that great. He had a really good sequence where he stuffed someone at the rim, and then the Wizards went down. Some good passing, found a pull, I think, in the corner for three. And that was when they were up 19. They eventually, blew the game, and we can talk about Brian Keefe's decisions at the end. You know, playing Kispert for defense and not offense, even though Kispert had it going on offense and not defense. There's a bunch of things. The pull, terrible shot at the buzzer. Let's talk about the Pacers game for a second. Wizards obviously with a 19-point lead. Poole dropped 42. Kispert, 21 points. They were very good. There's a couple points that I thought the game changed. The Pacers kind of came back. The Wizards, I think at this point, were still up 5, 115 to 110. About 2 minutes left, roughly. The ball goes off the Pacers are on offense. The ball goes off their foot. They give them the ball. The Wizards are on offense. Ball goes off Indiana, something like that. But they get the ball. It's clearly off Indiana. Brian Keefe is a challenge. He can still challenge it. It's a big play. The Wizards could have like 2 minutes left, the ball up 5, and in full control. Or they can let Indiana linger around. What they do is not challenge. And then Indiana proceeds to get an and one on that possession. Then they hit a three. They go on a 6-0 run to take the lead. And it's why do you not challenge it? You have a challenge for a reason. Just use it. You can't take it with you. That was the problem that the Wizards fans had with Woj, Wesonso Jr., that is, that he wouldn't challenge. Just like he loved retaining challenges onto the next game, which is impossible. Just challenge. You're going to get it right. It's clearly off them. Give yourself another possession and take one away from them in a close game. That's what you got to do there, and they didn't for some reason. I really didn't like that decision. Another one, 21 seconds left. Instead of taking Corey Kispert out of timeout, where the Pacers are down two, they keep Corey Kispert in the game. You have other options. I mean, you just acquired A.J. Johnson. He's not the greatest on offense, but he's a solid defender. He's got good length, good size. Put him in the game. You had a plethora of other options other than Corey Kispert, who is one of your worst defenders. Let's call a spade a spade. Great on offense, not great on defense. They look for him. They get it to their guard, and Nembhard goes right at Kispert, draws a foul, makes both free throws, and the Wizards are no longer in firm control. And then you get to the end, and yeah, Jordan Poole was cooking all night. He was terrific, but you call a timeout, and out of that timeout, the action is literally get Poole the ball inbounds, and then everyone get out of the way. He's going to take a step back three. If you guys remember against Charlotte, I literally tweeted before that final possession where Poole hit that clutch step back three. I said, who gets the last shot here? I know it's going to be Poole, and it's going to be a step back three. I hope I hope he makes the step back three. But I don't hope that's the look. You can get a better look than that. But the Wizards and Brian Keefe were like, you're going, Jordan, here's the ball. Take a step back three, really bad, contested shot. He could have taken Nembhard to the lane and driven. He decided not to. He could have swung it to Kispert in the corner who had it going. He didn't. He took a 36-foot contested sidestep three that was nowhere close. Again, that's not the shot. You can get a way better look than that with the game on the line, especially if Brian Keefe uses the tools around him, draws up a play. Maybe you go to Kispert because everyone knows it's going to Poole. I don't know, but sorry. I didn't actually plan to talk about the Indiana game because it happened about a week ago. But At the same time, it just kind of annoyed me, that whole sequence at the end, because the Wizards, you know, should have won this game. Nonetheless, a 19-point lead, but all the compounding errors at the end. You got all the people saying, yeah, Jordan Poole had 42, but he took so many shots and all that. Not only was he like 50% from the field, by the way, on those shots, no one else was creating down the stretch. It was all Jordan Poole. Like, Corey Kispert had it going, but you didn't see him making, you know, creating his own shot. Bub, George, they were kind of getting the ball and passing it right back to Poole. Sarr wasn't doing much. It was Poole. And with everyone looking at him, he still got to the cup. He still, you know, made shots down the stretch. And that's kind of what's important. He took the lead with 21 seconds left. So that's the Pacers game. I don't want to harp on it too much. But like I was talking about, Sarr was out for a while with an injury return. Wasn't that great against the Pacers. Hopefully that rust is shaken off and he comes back stronger. I've seen a lot of people ask me about Sadiq Bey updates. If you remember, the Wizards signed him in the offseason to a pretty cheap contract. I think it was maybe like 3 years, $20 million or something. It was a really good deal for Washington. But Bey injured his ACL. He tore his ACL in March of last year. So, you know, usually I'm not a doctor, but I think they say usually 9 to 12 months, and really closer to 12 months for a full recovery from an ACL injury. He tore it on, I believe, March 11th, and it's February 17th when I'm recording this pod. We've had no updates, and the Wizards this season have been pretty notorious. I mean, you look at Alex Sarr, like we talked about, there was no update on him. Like, there was no, like, yeah, Alex is progressing, or at least that I didn't see. It was just kind of like, okay, he's back for the last game before the break. There you go. Didn't really know why he was out so long with an ankle injury. I guess it was a pretty bad sprain. But usually you know that, and you don't just have to assume that. And the same thing's happened with Bey. And I don't know if reporters are asking or not asking, or maybe they just don't ask anymore because they know that Brian Keefe's not going to give him anything. But yeah, I haven't had any updates on Sadiq Bey, and that's kind of what I got. He should be around, recovered by this time. But it's also possible that the Wizards were basically like, at the beginning of the season when we signed you, you're not playing this year. We're obviously trying to tank and we're trying to get a good pick. You're a very good player. Why don't you just take the year? We're paying you basically to just $6 million, go attack your rehab really hard, make sure that you come back in 2025, in October, whenever you are fully ready. And it's possible that maybe they'll do that in like April and just be like, here's like 3 to 4 games to get under your belt, get your legs under you, kind of test the ACL and make sure everything's good before you move on to the offseason and then go into the season next year. So maybe that's the case, but for right now, we know nothing about Sadiq Bey's injury, or his timetable, I should say, from returning from that injury. Alex Len, obviously required in that trade. He was waived. Was supposed to sign with the Pacers. Mark Williams' trade falls through. He decides to sign with the Lakers. I think it was like a minus 19. Lakers Twitter was, seems to say, not happy with his minutes against Utah and their loss before the break. A big, big win for Utah, by the way, because that moved them further away from the Wizards. We'll talk about the tank standings later, as we always do. But yeah, Alex Len waived, you know, was returned to Washington. He was pretty solid, honestly, on the Russell Westbrook, Bradley Beal playoff team that was 4-1 by Philly. But yeah, he's waived. And in the corresponding move, they signed Jalen Noel to a 10-day, very much deserved. He's now been released from that two-way, which doesn't mean he's released. I think it just means he's back on the go-go. And in return, Eric Stevenson, West Virginia alum, I think he's shooting 38% from three, 17 points, 4 rebounds for the go-go. He got the call up to the 10-day. And I mean, I don't know what that really means, because I mean, maybe you'll see him at the end of a game, but he's not going to get rotation minutes. So I'm not sure what their whole plan is with the 10 days, but maybe it's something above my head. I also want to touch on this. I tweeted a video of Marcus Smart coaching up Jordan Poole. My guy Jacob Stark, he sent me the video from the game a couple of days ago. A couple games ago, I posted it, got a couple million views, I think, like 17,000 likes. Like, people were really, I guess, enjoying. I mean, there was half the people were like, this is really cool, it's nice for Marcus Smart to coach him up. And then you got a bunch of the clowns that are like, oh, of course, like Jordan Poole needs it, or it's going through one ear out the other. But my take on it is that you acquire Marcus Smart, obviously, for the first round pick, but you also in turn also get his expertise. He's a, you know, 2 years removed from winning Defensive Player of the Year, was always on consistently good Boston Celtics teams as a focal point of their defense. A guy that can make threes, that can space the floor, just as a guy that competes hard and you know, is a good guy to have as a culture builder. And for a Wizards team that's looking for someone like that, that's great to see that he is taking initiative and being like, I'm not just here to get paid and move on, go home. You know, maybe he's not going to play a lot, but at least he's taking initiative and saying, hey, while I'm here, I might as well, you know, pass some knowledge on. And look, Jordan Poole has gotten better on defense, but it can never hurt to get taught by a former defensive player of the year. So that was cool to see. Wizards fans seem to really like that. Hopefully Middleton can do the same thing for the young guys too. Speaking of Middleton, he's been listed as not with the team on the injury report, which I don't get. Some people said they saw him on the bench at games. I think he's with the team. And the trade is complete because Kyle Kuzma's been playing every game pretty much for the Bucks. So I don't really understand it, why they listed him as not with the team. I think maybe it's something, again, that I don't know. But Smart's been listed out with a finger injury. They both didn't play through the All-Star break. Colby Jones did play. He was all right with the go-go, but he hasn't played with the Wizards yet. So all three of the guys that were acquired at the trade deadline that weren't waived after that and are still with the team, they have not made their Wizards debuts yet. And I don't know if they're going to do it after the All-Star break because, like, Middleton is healthy. He was playing sporadically with the Bucks before. Smart, again, like a guy that has a finger injury, but I don't think it's too bad of an injury. Jones obviously is healthy. So if the Wizards want them to play, like, they can play, I feel like, after the All-Star break. They're also trying to lose. So I don't know. I feel like Michael Winger and Will Dawkins kind of their fingerprints all over the rotations and who plays, who doesn't. The minutes they play, I feel like that's kind of them. And yeah, Keith probably has some say too, but based on the rotations and all that stuff, maybe it'll clear up after the deadline because you're not really showcasing people too much anymore. But I mean, if you're the Wizards and you're trying to get that worst record, I don't think playing Marcus Smart and Chris Middleton really helps you get to that record. They're great players still, good veterans. They can help you win a couple games. I don't think it would hurt. I think Wizards fans would like some, you know, to see them play. But at the same time, I would understand if they were like, yeah, they're kind of hurt. We're just going to pretty much sit them and let the young guys play. I think Wizards fans are fine with that. Honestly, Kuzma's not with the team. Valanciunas isn't taking minutes from Sar and others. I think Wizards fans are fine with whatever they decide to do. But I think it would be cool to see Middleton and Smart, especially for how they would affect the young guys. Playing with better players makes guys better. As you've seen with like a team like Houston, when you got Jalen Green out there with a bunch of guys that are just not that great, he really can't do much. But then you put Şengün, you put Van Vliet, you put Dylan Brooks around him, and he's very good. It's just you need good talent around you to kind of ascend. And I think, you know, that would be good if the young guys are playing with good veterans like Middleton and Smart. Wizards also signed Jalen Martin. He was on the Nets G League team, signed into a two-way deal. Fills the spot that they had available after trading Jared Butler to Philadelphia. I mean, Jalen Martin's a solid player. You know, probably won't get too much NBA minutes, but it's nice to continue to stack good players in the G League. It's how you got all of that for a trade. I wouldn't say surrounding Jared Butler, but pretty much that's what the Sixers got back. They gave him a standard deal. They clearly like him. So I'm seeing the gap with Jordan Goodwin. You built him up in your G League system, use him as a trade piece in the Beal trade. You know, the Wizards are kind of doing this, and Jalen Noel has been terrific. So it's nice to have a good G League system. Shout out to GoGo head coach Cody Topper. Met him at the Brian Keefe intro press, a really nice guy. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to talk about some of my All-Star break assessments. Kind of, you know, 28 games left for Washington at this point. Here's a couple of bullet points I just rattled off when I was brainstorming for this pod. They're losing as planned. Like, you could hate as much as you want on how they are doing it. You don't like that they played Kuzma that much. You don't like that they didn't trade him at last year's deadline. You don't like that they signed Valanciunas to eat up Sar's minutes. You don't like Brian Keefe's decision-making. You hate the rotations. All of that being said, like, they are the worst team by a full 3.5 games. Like, they are – the season has been about development, and it's been about losing games. And stacking assets. They stacked assets pretty well at the trade deadline. The losing is clearly going as planned, like I mentioned, and the development's been solid. I mean, look at Bilal Coulibaly with a triple-double the other night. He's been off and on, but he's developing. Bob Carrington, Keyshawn George, I'll touch on their stats in a second, but they've been very promising the last couple of games. You got guys like Alex Sarr that you just drafted number 2 overall. They got a long way to go, but you've seen the defense. The shot has gotten better progressively throughout the season. You're seeing exactly what they want. So as much as you can harp on, I don't want to watch the games, I don't know if they really care because this is going as planned. So you can't really hate on them. The Wizards are wizarding. They are tanking, and it's going as planned. So, I guess respect. They're doing their job. Here's some rookie numbers. Like I said, I talk about. Let me pull up. I tweeted this out the other day. Some rookie numbers at the All-Star break. Here we go. Alex Saar, 11.4 points per game, 6.5 rebounds, 1.5 blocks, and shooting 31% from three. And granted, he was shooting like 12% from three in summer league and like 20% through the first 15 to 20 games of his NBA career. So the fact that it's at 31% is great. Bob Carrington, 9 points per game, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 35.6% from three. Keyshawn George, 8 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 31.2% from three. And you'll see these percentages in a second when I talk about how they've done recently. But all these guys were really shooting the ball terribly from outside to begin the season. And the fact that they are all above 30% pretty much from three, granted how bad they started, is a positive. Obviously, you got the blocks for Saar and the rebounds for Saar. That's what you're looking to see. Bob Carrington shooting really well from three the last couple of weeks. Mid-range has been great. Rebounding, assisting, he's kind of doing it all. They got Keyshawn George, who's shooting like 60% or something from three the last couple of games. Been phenomenal. And I want to touch on, you can't really talk about Saar post-Kuzma trade, because I don't think, number one, Kuzma really affected how he plays. And number two, he hasn't played all but one game since, you know, Kuzma was traded. But what you can do is you can talk about Bob Carrington and Keyshawn George, because they've played big minutes. They've started pretty much. They have started every single game since Kyle Kuzma was traded. That's a four-game sample size. In those four games, Keyshawn George is averaging 15 points, 7 rebounds, on 51% from the field and 57% from three. Bob Carrington, 16 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 52% from three. So you had people that were saying trade Kuzma, trade Kuzma, trade Kuzma for a myriad of reasons. But one of the biggest ones was that he's taking away from Keyshawn George. He's taking shots away from Bob Carrington. George should be starting instead of Kyle Kuzma. He doesn't affect winning. He's hurting everyone else's development. Kuzi even said it himself, I'm not here for anyone's development. I'm here for myself. I'm here to build my trade value, get myself out of here on a contender and you know, chase a ring. That's what he wanted. And for Wizards fans to be so spot on and so right is just hilarious development. Because a lot of times they'll just be like, you just want Kuzma traded. You're just saying that. But they weren't. And I said it all along as well. Like, Kyle Kuzma is the reason the team has 9 wins. He's not a big proponent in their successes. But again, he's not the reason that they're bad. They're bad because their roster is really young and also not great. But he is a reason that Bob and George and all of them haven't been ascending at the rate maybe some fans wanted. And I think we'll keep some fans going throughout games and throughout all these losses is the development in this rebuild now. Bob and George playing so well post-Kuzma trade. You know, Alex Saar coming back. Hopefully he plays well. Bilal to triple-double in the literal first game post-Kuzma trade. So it's, again, pretty clear, I'd say, that that fans were right. You know, give yourself a pat on the back there because, I mean, Bob and George have been absolutely, you know, just great. I don't really have many, like, words to describe it. They've been really good, really solid players, and it's nice to see that ascension, that development, especially after you trade a guy like Kuz who had ate a lot of minutes and a lot of shots. And a lot of usage too. So that's kind of my housekeeping. Hopefully that's a little bit of an update. If you had kind of departed from the Wizards, don't blame you if you did for the last couple of weeks or for the last week because of the All-Star break. But what I want to do now is go through some of the mailbag questions and hopefully answer some of what you guys wanted to hear about. The first question I have is from at NiceTakeCH. He says, if the Wizards win the lottery, what's the minimum haul we would take from OKC if they offered us picks from their war chest? 3 2025 firsts with a protected 1 through 6 or 1 through 10 in exchange for first overall seems like a no-brainer. This is something that I think Bill Simmons mentioned on his pod the other day, is that OKC kind of needs these you know, young, really low-salary, rookie contract-type players to fill out the roster. If they're going to give SGA Supermax and then Jalen Williams, Chet, big contracts. They just gave Caruso a solid deal, Dort on a deal. They're already paying Hardenstein good money. They need some of those guys. And so you're not really going to use all your first-round picks to take to make a trade for another big salary player. What Bill Simmons was saying is just package 8 to 9 firsts for the number one pick, at Cooper Flagg. And then you're set for literally the next 5 to 7 years. And you really don't need all those first round picks anyway, because what else do you need outside of what you have? Even financially, can you afford that? So that being said, maybe CH kind of got this idea from that. I don't know. Maybe it's his own idea, but that's what I thought of originally when I saw it. If you're the Wizards, you get the first pick, and let's say OKC ends up getting that Philadelphia pick and meeting like what it's I think top six protected. So OKC is like 7 or 8. Put them at 7 because the Sixers are not playing well right now. OKC is 7, and basically for the Wizards to move back what 6 spots to number 7, they would get. I think the Wizards would need 4, and I think they need to be in separate drafts because this draft is deep and all. But I think the Wizards want more, and honestly, maybe even 5. Because look, you're the Wizards. You have been waiting and waiting and waiting to get the first pick to get a generational player. Because I don't know if they really have that guy on their roster. Cooper Flagg's been built up for a couple years now as being that guy. And so for you to get lucky, because in the lottery, like you saw with Detroit last year, it's no given that if you're the worst team and you have a 40% chance at 1, you're not going to fall outside to 5 or even 4. And so when you're the Wizards, yeah, you can move back to 7, still get a solid player. But number one, he won't be that franchise guy. You're going to have to continue to wait. And number two, you don't even know if any of those other picks that the Thunder have are going to be that high up. You don't know if they're the Thunder's picks or their other team's picks. They're probably not even going to be lottery picks. And so when you're sitting here and you're thinking, look, I think we're one big, great player away from kind of ascending in this rebuild. I don't know maybe if that is even tradable. Like, I don't know if you're the Wizards and you're like, we can get 8 first round picks, but 6 or 7 are probably going to be outside the lottery. Maybe 1 will be inside, and that might not even be a top 5 pick. I don't know how much that moves the needle, because who are you going to trade for? You have all those picks. I don't think anybody's going to, number one, want to come to Washington who's a big-name player. And the Wizards obviously want to do this through the draft. They don't want to do this through, okay, let's draft a couple solid players and then bring in a superstar. No superstar, number one, is going to want to go to Washington. And number two, that's just not how the Wizards want to build. They want to build through the draft. So look, you might call me crazy, but if I'm the Wizards, I get 1, I have a chance to take Cooper Flagg. Or I get offered 6 to 7 first-round picks to move back 6 slots from the Thunder. I don't know if I take it. And I feel crazy saying that, but I believe that because I've watched Cooper Flagg so much this year. Like, I think he can be that guy. And I don't know. I think for me, it trails off at around 5 or 6 in the draft. I don't know if the Wizards realistically can continue to wait. Best case scenario, they get another chance at a first pick in the next couple of years. But what if that doesn't happen? And the Wizards just have all these solid players, but they don't have that guy. And they missed on a chance to get that guy. I don't know if I would do it if I'm them. I think I'd be content with where I'm at with the number one pick. But really good question. At Big Mike Bristow said, if the Wizards get anything other than the first pick, go over the players that they would be looking for other than Flagg. It's good. Like, they get they can only get picks 1 through 5. That would happen if they were the worst team. 3.5 game lead. It's probably going to happen. So again, I'm just going to go through my top 5. I'm going to go through my big board later because someone else asked a question. But right now, I think the draft is pretty much going to go Flagg, Harper/Bailey, and then maybe like Johnson, Edgecombe, Demon, Traore. Like there's a lot after the top 3, but the top 3 are kind of going to be the top 3. My big board right now is I have Flagg 1, Dylan Harper 2, which might surprise people, but I just think he's such a complete player, smart player. I think Ace Bailey's phenomenal, but I'd take Harper over him. I put Ace Bailey 3. I got Trey Johnson, guard out of Texas. I love his game. I compared him to Bradley Beal a couple episodes ago. I really like the way he plays. Trey Johnson at 4, and then VJ Edgecombe out of Baylor has all the traits, just be a terrific player. So that's my top 5. So, to briefly answer your question, they get 1 Flagg, 2 Harper, 3 Bailey. Obviously, these are considering that, again, if they get 3 and Bailey goes 2, obviously you take Harper at 3. If they're 4, I would take Trey Johnson. 5, I would take Edgecombe. But a lot can change. Like, a lot of people have kind of soured on Nolan Treyer or Treyer, however you say it. I think he's great. I wouldn't mind taking him five. Not as high as a guy on a guy like Igor Demin, but we can go over that later when we talk about the big board. But hopefully that answers your question, Mike. At DC Sports Talk asked, how much have you looked at Flag Harbor Bailey this year, and who do you think the Wiz should take? I kind of just touched on this, but again, Flag is a clear number one for me. Such a complete two-way game as well. I think he's a pretty good defender. Then you got, I would put Harper two. I put Bailey three. I don't know why, but Dylan Harper reminds me of Cade Cunningham, just like a bigger guard. I think he's 6 foot six, and just like the way he plays, the physicality he plays with, has an outside jumper too at times. I just really like him. I like the way he plays, and I think he's a guy that is going to come into the league and just play well. It's kind of a short summary of my scouting report. Again, I don't watch like film on these guys. I just every Saturday I just watch college basketball for the entire day from 12 to 12. And so again, from watching a lot of Rutgers, I just, that's who I think of when I watch Dylan Harper. I think of Cade Cunningham. And so obviously I'm taking him at two. Then I go Bailey at three. And again, if the Wizards get three, they get Bailey. He probably would have been the number one pick last year. So not the end of the world, but if they don't get a top three pick, then you can start to kind of panic. At Wizards next up asked, what do you think the Wizards' outlook is on this coaching staff? Any looming offseason changes at head coach? And also, what's a short list of names you like to see as Wizards' head coach? I mean, I think the coaching staff's probably going to stay the same. I mean, maybe some guys will get poached for bigger gigs at other places on the assistant coaching staff. Brian Keefe is a bridge coach. Again, I don't think he's been terrible this year with what he's had to work with. I also don't think he's been terrific to kind of shed those bridge coach labels from Wizards fans. I mean, the Pacers game as well. I mean, 20-point lead pretty much. A couple questionable decisions in terms of rotations, personnel at the end. But again, I don't think there's any way he gets fired after this year. Yeah, the team's bad, but they're bad by design. I don't know how much control he's even had over his rotations. He's had a fluctuating, changing roster a couple times throughout his tenure here. In DC. So I don't think they will fire or should fire him. Number one, if they do, I don't know how attractive this job really is to many people, because maybe they'll be the next bridge coach. Maybe that'll be the only coaching opportunity or head coaching opportunity that they get in the league. In terms of a short list of names, like I really don't know if I should answer that second part, because Frankie's still the coach and I think he will remain the coach. So maybe that's something that we can revisit later down the line. If they decide to move on, then I'll do an emergency pod. I'll probably even do a spaces. And we can talk through who are some names that I like. Right now, Sam Cassell. I think he's a great assistant. I think he's deserving of it. I felt like the Wizards should have given him a look when they hired Wes Unseld Jr. I think he actually got an interview. They didn't give him the job. And so, yeah, I think he'd be a great head coach. At G Dive, great name, by the way. His name's Greg, too. Greg Divers said, since I don't get to watch the Wizards on a regular basis, what position do they need most in their starting lineup? Answer to that, everything. I mean, if we're being completely transparent here, I think they need a forward, maybe a two-way forward. I think Keyshawn George can be that, but he's not that right now. You consider Sarz your center, obviously, for the future. Bubs, your two guard. Bilal is your three or four. Or maybe he can even play the two. Bilal, I mean, he's been playing point guard, so he can play wherever. And then it's just a matter of, like, pool. Where do you see him? He's only 25. He's gotten better this season. Honestly, he's gotten better for the most part on a pretty similar trajectory as he's joined the team. So I think everything, Greg, I think that's my answer to you, everything. They need whatever. Best player available in the draft, best players available wherever. They need a lot of help. What part of the game do they need to improve on to become a winning team? It's honestly defense. U.S. defense, the rebounding leadership. It's defense. Some nights they bring it, some nights they don't. More often they don't. For a while, they were the worst, 30th ranked in defensive efficiency and defensive rating. So defense. I think they need a lot of better defenders, but I think they need a better defensive scheme overall. And so hopefully that gets better with time. My guy at MTBag77, Michael B, said, what does an ideal rest of the season look like in your opinion, followed by your ideal offseason scenario? I love questions like this, Michael, because it makes me actually like think analytically, like what actually does need to happen, because you really like just kind of look, okay, the Wizards are going to lose a lot this year, and then it's the draft, and then what? You don't really look like that. You don't really look past that. So what does an ideal rest of the season look like to me? I mean, losing, it entails a lot of losing, but losing in the right ways and close games like you saw against Indiana, you don't want to blow a 19-point lead, but that was good reps at the end of games for some of the young guys. They played very well against a solid Indiana team. So a lot of more losses, close losses, but a lot of more losses. You have a 3.5-game lead. Obviously, ideally, you see good development from Bub and George and Bilal and Sarr, and even throw A.J. Johnson in there. But you also see losing enough to where you finish as the NBA's worst team, which would guarantee that the Wizards won't fall outside the top five and guarantee that they have the best chance, which is a 14% chance, tied with two other teams for the number one overall pick. So that's an ideal rest of the season. My ideal offseason, like, yeah, obviously you get the number one pick, you take Cooper Flagg, you do another thing like you did last year where you sign a guy like Valanciunas to a cheap deal, even a guy like Sadiq Bey returns, maybe you find another guy like that who's coming off injury, rehash his value, and then move him at the deadline. Maybe you look into trading Middleton and Smart if you can get good enough deals. Maybe you buy them out so that you can add more young players to your roster. That's kind of what it looks like. You can't look too far ahead without knowing where you're going to pick. But again, some smaller deals on the margins for some veterans. You obviously have the number one pick, whoever you pick. You have two picks now with Memphis' pick. So it's all about the draft. It's about the draft. It's about summer league. And that's kind of where we're at now. You know, quiet free agency, not many trades. I don't expect them unless they're in the draft. But that's kind of my outlook on it, Michael. Good question. Connor at Diamonds Baltimore said, we all know who the Wizards want to target with the 2025 first-round pick. I assume the Wizards' own pick. But what about that late pick that the Wizards acquired from Memphis? What would you like to see the Wizards do with that pick? It's a good question. It's just that's top 14 protected, and it's going to convey. The Wizards are going to get it. Memphis is going to make the playoffs. It's just like, where do they finish? I would expect it to be, because if you remember, the first round, or honestly the whole draft in the NBA, is based on regular season record, whereas the NFL is all based on playoffs. Wherever you finish, like if the Grizzlies finished the eighth seed in the West and had the worst record out of all 16 playoff teams, they will be the 15th pick guaranteed. Doesn't matter even if they win the finals, they're 15. And so they could be, you know, wherever I'd expected to be in the late first round. A guy that I've seen, you know, dropping a lot in mock drafts has been JT Toppin from Texas Tech. Again, I think he's a really good player. He's had a triple-double, I think, the other day. You could target a guy like him. Ben Saraf from Israel. He's been mocked. I saw some mocks where he's going in the mid to late 20s. I have him as a lottery pick. So maybe you can target a guy like him. Obviously, the Wizards dipped into that when they drafted Denny, but that's also a different front office. It's hard to say. I think my answer would be you got to see where that Memphis pick falls. Late first round, a lot could go a lot of ways with that pick. My guy, Josue Gonzalez, said, are you concerned with Bilal's offense? Seems like the handle, and especially a shot, has perhaps hindered his ability to be more aggressive. Concerned, no. But I will say that he needs to be more consistent. The handle's gotten a little bit better. His vision, as you saw with the career-high 11 assists, has gotten very good. The three-point shot's still inconsistent. Got no teams are really respecting him. He's getting a lot of space outside. He's got a long way to go. But again, he's only, 20? And he has, you know, he was drafted as a project. The defense is there. But I think he's progressing the way that he probably should progress. You know, getting pretty much slightly better every single season. It's just a matter of putting it all together and being more consistent with that. And I think you'll see that later down the line. My guy, 76 AMC Gremlin, okay, said, in my opinion, there has been almost 20 years of predominantly poor on-court and locker room leadership. There's been finger-pointing, lack of focus and intensity, and some guys obviously looking to get theirs. Do you think Marcus Smart can help drive a reset in culture and contribute a focus for the rebuilding that centers around players doing what's legitimately needed to compete for a championship? It's a deep question, a good one. I think I touched on this at the top of the show, but here's what I will say. The second Will Dawkins, Michael Winger, and all of them came in here was all about culture, rebuilding culture, a winning culture at that. And there have been times the last, 2 years that this rebuild's going on where you don't find it as a winning culture. When you're getting blown out, you're losing 16. They've lost 16 games in a row three times since they started this rebuild. It's just a matter of, like, you got to shed that. You got to get some guys in here that know how to win. When you got a lot of young guys in here, there's not a lot of experience. There's not a lot of experience, obviously, closing games, but being in situations where guys don't get along in the locker room, where there's a divide between leadership and players. It's all these little things behind the scenes that, like, you don't know how to deal with them, I guess, if you're just entering the league. And guys like Smart and Middleton and all them, hopefully they come in here and teach these guys how to go about that, how to be professionals, how to get through tough stretches, how to work on their game, how to take care of their bodies. It's all those little things, obviously, on the court, but also off the court, locker room, bonding, getting through tough situations, tough times, all the losing. That's kind of where the culture starts to build up. And so that's why I want to see these guys play. Like, at some point, you got to win. And maybe it's not this year, but at some point, you got to put together a better product. You can't just go losing season, losing season, losing season, just flip a script like that, and you're back in the playoffs. I mean, the Thunder did that, but the Thunder are a different breed with how they rebuilt. I mean, you saw a team like Houston losing, 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 and then slowly a better season. And then a season where they almost made the playoffs, but then they tear it off at the end. And now they're not playing well now as of late, but they're a top four team in the West. They're a real contender. And so it can go like that pretty quickly, but they got a reset in their culture. They brought in a new head coach. They drafted really well, but they brought in Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet. VanVleet with a championship experience. Dylan Brooks is a really tough competitor. I mean, you see the same thing with, I'm not going to compare Middleton and all that, but Middleton won a title. Smart, pretty similar player to Dylan Brooks at times. You know, really aggressive, a good defender, gets in people's faces, is an energy guy. You hate him if he's not on your team. You love him if he's on a. It's just you got to have those guys, those leadership guys that can kind of build it. And I think you touched on that as well with Smart. So hopefully you can come in here and kind of, you know, try to reset the culture. A couple more questions here. I want to make sure I get through everyone. Vinicius Raptor said, what is the ceiling and the floor you imagine for the three rookies, specifically Keyshawn, after what you saw up to this point? The ceiling, like Sar always had a ceiling, was Jaren Jackson Jr. You know, he's pretty similar build. It's got to get bigger, but clearly likes the three ball and is a good rim protector. Has the length to block shots, so I think that's his ceiling. His floor, again, is a guy that can occasionally make the three, but is always too thin. Gets backed into the post by bigs and just really doesn't have much on offense. So hopefully he can kind of be a complete player. Bob Garrington can be whatever he wants. He's got all the talent. He's already ascending with a shot. So I don't want to make too many comps here. This is going to sound egregious, by the way, so bear with me. But, like, D-Wade, I don't know. I kind of see it. I mean, he's great at the mid-range. He's adding a three ball. He's not the biggest dude in the world, but he's still got decent size for the guard position. Is a really good defender. I think maybe that's his ceiling. You can call me crazy. That's a pretty hot take, I think. Floor, I don't know, like a regular average two guard that's like a decent scorer, but really doesn't, you know, ascend into anything special. And then Keyshawn, and you asked specifically for him, 3-and-D guys like him don't come around often. I mean, look at Trey Murphy and Herb Jones in New Orleans. They are so good. They're exactly what contending teams need. Great three-point shooters. Well, at least Trey Murphy, but terrific defenders. Got the length on that end to make an impact and can come out and space the floor on the other end. Every team needs that. And I think that's what I praised the Wizards for at pick 24 when they took him. You're not looking to hit a home run with this pick. You're looking to get a solid NBA player that can play both sides. And I think that's exactly what they got in George. And you've seen him. He's 56% over his last four games from three. He's figuring it out. He really is. If he can find out how to not foul on defense, and you saw that with Denny, he couldn't stop fouling his rookie year and his second year. And then he realized, okay, let me just play defense. And if they make a tough shot, they make it. I'm not going to reach. So I think the sky's the limit for George. Really good player. Maybe like a Trey Murphy type two-way guy. Ian said, with Flag saying he wants to run it back another year, it's funny because he can't outrun the Wizards. The Wizards will be in position to grab next year too, if that's the case. That is true. Like, a lot of Wizards fans think, like, okay, this is the bad year, but we'll turn it around next year. No. Probably not. Maybe you won't be the worst team, but you're still going to be really bad. So yeah, I mean, again, I think Zion also wanted to return to Duke. So like, Flag's going to come into the draft. There's too much money to give up. If John Shire lets him return, I think that's pretty selfish of John Shire. and the whole Duke coaching staff. You can't really say that you're looking to do the do what's right for these guys and then have Cooper Flagg turn down generational money just to come back and help you again, try to make a run at the tournament. At OTD, Andre said, what's our starting five next year and how many wins? I mean, starting five, like, my best guess is kind of what you've been seeing. Like, Poole, Bub, Bilal, George, and Sar. I mean, your last four first-round picks and Poole, who's been pretty good, your best player clearly this year. Yeah, still young on a pretty big contract. You're not going to trade him. I don't think anyone wants him in via trade with the contract. So, like, I think that's kind of your starting five. And you go from there. I mean, look, you take Cooper Flagg. You're probably looking at Keyshawn George moving to the bench and Cooper Flagg slots in as your four. But I don't know. Maybe if you take Ace Bailey, he slots in at the four. There's a lot of moving parts, but I think that's where I'd go for the most part. The five bearing whoever they draft in June. And then last question from, I guess I got two more. Tress Way and Joy are a terrific name. Said, what are some of the prospects? I touched on this with the Grizzlies pick. You can rewind. But that's probably going to be later first round. Some late first round picks. And then the final question from at DC mainly said, why is Sersa Vucevic not getting more playing time with how productive he is on offense? I mean, number one, defense. He's not that great of a defender. Number two, physicality. He's got to get a lot bigger and a lot stronger. And that also ties him with defense. I mean, you had the trade with Valanciunas. That's why he wasn't getting many minutes. Alex Sar returning kind of moved him out of the rotation. Rashawn Holmes has been terrific, and I tried to say to play him a lot more in the beginning, but they decided they wanted to play Valanciunas to build his trade value. Valid. You got 2 seconds for him. But I think, again, he's got a long ways to go. He's still only 20 or 21. Just let him progress. Let him play with Gogo. I'd like to see him play more. I mean, what do you have, like 18 points the other night? Was efficient 7-10 from the field? Rebounded the ball better, but defense needs to improve. I'm not saying that's the reason why he's not in it. I think Sar returning and Holmes playing well is why he's not playing. But hopefully that answers your question. And that's all the mailbag. So I'm glad I was able to get through them all because I appreciate all you guys, you know, taking the time to ask some questions. If you want to respond to my response, my DMs are always open. I always answer. So feel free to hit me up in my DMs at Greg Finberg on Twitter. That's probably going to wrap it up for this episode. I wanted to get one out during the All-Star break, which, by the way, All-Star game was terrible. It's just... figure it out. The NBA has got to figure it out. I watched 50 minutes of commercials for 10 minutes to watch, you know, some of my favorite players, you know, play. And they played, it was competitive, semi. But the point is, I don't want to watch TNT crew put on fishing gear. For how much I fun and more competitive, and also help the young guys develop better. And I think that's all I wanted to get through. So yeah, hope you guys enjoy this one. Thank you for listening. I'll be back on Friday with a stream for Bullets Forever, for the game, the return game for Washington, I think at home against Milwaukee. Kyle Kuzma's return to DC. I think he's going to get booed. Depends on the crowd that goes, but it's a Friday night, probably packed. I think they'll boo him, but I guess we'll see. I'll be tuned in for that, to see what they do, but that's going to do for this episode. Appreciate all you guys for listening. Go Wiz.